All right, we are back. Let's get excited. This is not going to be a very exciting podcast, but please listen.
Way to sell it.
Well, I don't have much silver lining to discuss today. Spoiler alert, on Marquette's three-game losing streak. The only silver lining, and I guess we'll start there, Marquette losing to Creighton and Providence in two games that were somewhat but not exceedingly competitive this week. And I don't have much to say positively other than these are understandable losses. I had a tweet, Ben. Did you see I had a tweet?
You tweet?
I tweet sometimes. I had a tweet, which is such a lame way to start a sentence. But I had a tweet that basically said all three of the last losses are understandable in a vacuum. It sucks that they all come in a row and at a time when we have extremely recent precedent for the program struggling. But it puts all the emphasis on making sure you don't lose to Georgetown because Creighton's the best team in the conference right now.
Best team
Villanova,
in the country, question mark?
I mean, borderline.
My
If you're going
God.
purely on form, they're freaking amazing right now. But like Creighton, best team in the conference. Villanova, you've never won there. And an 11 a.m. Central Time game on Saturday morning at the Dunk is a freaking miserable draw. So all three are reasonable in a vacuum. However, they just suck in concert. Much like Bob Dylan, they suck
Nice.
in concert.
That was a good reference. I kind of equate this last stretch of four games in many ways to the way that this team started off in conference play because it involved a road loss to a stupid hot team. We lost to Seton Hall on the road and lost to Creighton on Wednesday. A big gutsy home win against Villanova, and then here this time against Butler. Unfortunate loss to Providence somehow, and then a road loss to another top tier conference team. And so, again, I very much agree with your statement that it's less about the individual games itself and more about the stretch that they are currently embarked on. And it does need to flip around for my own sanity because, boy, if they lose to Georgetown, I'm going to be comparing this year to last year all over again.
Well, I mean, it's a really spot on analogy because Georgetown was the fourth loss in the regular season streak to end last year, Georgetown at home. Now, it wasn't senior, it won't be the last game of the regular season like it was last year, but it's essentially the same game. I would say this losing streak right now is a little more understandable and reasonable within the context of the season than that losing streak was. And if you read what Marcus said in the post-game press conference, there I have a sense that regardless of the adversity, we don't have a house divided trying to win, where it seemed very clearly last year that the players weren't getting along through the struggles, and that was part of the issue. And that's how we end up with the Hauser brothers transferring. So, in that sense, I'm less concerned and I'm less panicky.
I am a little bit concerned again about our dear friend Sakar Annam. Based on a conversation I had earlier today with our friend and colleague Paint Touches, he made a good point that Sakar's play is very much based on his own confidence, seemingly, and this recent stretch of his offensively is a wee bit reminiscent to what we saw from him earlier in the year when we were worried about whether or not he was actually a good player. And it's like that stretch early on that lasted until basically after the Orlando tournament.
Right.
And I worry about the stretch that he's on right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you really want to delve into what's going on with this losing streak, the offense has been much worse as a whole than it was for the start of Biggie's play. The turnover monster is a little bit back. The shooting, especially to start games, has been really bad.
Do you want to learn something that I just found out trying to follow up on my Sakar stuff?
What was that?
He is 4 of his last 22 from three-point range.
Yeah, I mean, so that checks out.
Yeah, it goes along directly with your point about the shooting.
He led the team in scoring against Creighton. Am I right in saying that? Yeah, he did, because Marcus only had 13. Yeah, I mean, he led the team in scoring against Creighton, but he had a sub-100 offensive rating in that game.
Yeah, 2 of 9 from three. We'll do that,
right,
too.
That's what kills him. And then he had an absolute clunker against Providence with 2 points in 29 minutes and a 65-0 rating. Speaking of offensive clunkers, do you want to get it out of the way, or should we...
I knew this was coming.
It's a really tough stretch for your boy.
Especially considering the fact that his three worst games of the year have all come directly after I wrote a praising article about the progress that he has made over conference play. I am speaking, of course, of our dear friend Brendan Bailey. And
I would also say, especially since his understudy is seemingly gathering some offensive and defensive momentum as well.
Yeah, Jamal Kane has
playing better.
Has definitely impressed recently, and it sparked a little bit of conversation with regards to the lineup construction for this team and how some of the on the court, off the court numbers, especially on the defensive end, heavily favor a lot more playing time of Jamal Kane, Greg Elliott, and Jace Johnson.
I have seen such chatter. Would you like to elaborate?
So, I very recently found an excellent tool called hoop-explorer.com. And in that website, you can do some searches based on different parameters. And so what I did was I looked at all of the possessions without Ed Morrow and after or outside of garbage time, and looked at some of the best lineups that are out there. And the thing about this one is that it'll give you all the stats for on the court, off the court. So it's not just, oh, the final scoring margin with this player on the court is this, and without him on, it's this. It'll give you like the 2 point percent on offense and defense for both. It'll give you turnovers, all that stuff. And the way it's going right now, Jamal Kane, Greg Elliott, and Jace Johnson on the court, either together or separately, seem to be just destroying worlds on defense, especially close to the rim, while also being able to provide at least comparable offense to what we are currently experiencing when Brendan Bailey, Sakaar Anand, and Kobe McEwen are on the court. So there's been some recent discussion about maybe getting those lads some more playing time. It's not completely at the point where, if you remember in the 2017 and the 2018 season, where the defense with Marcus Howard and Andrew Rousey on the court was so bad that it was not justifying the offensive contributions for them. But in the middle of a stretch like this, it might be something for Wojo to consider.
My one counter to those three guys would be, I think this has been Theo John's best stretch of his entire career.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would definitely agree with that.
On both ends as an aggregate.
Mm-hmm.
As much as Jace is good in small samples and, you know, limited minutes, I really think over the last couple of games we've seen something from Theo John that is what I have been kind of talking about, where I've said that, you know, Theo John is, or Tyreek Jones is aspirational Theo John. Mm. And he really seems to be figuring out his physicality, because mm-hmm. so much of his career has sort of been an odyssey of trying to learn how to use the immense strength and physical gifts he has on the basketball court in a way that doesn't just foul him out instantly.
Yeah, exactly.
That really has been his whole career to this point, and he has really channeled it lately. It's just unfortunate that the team is kind of mired in this stretch, because I think that's kind of going under the radar. But I do agree with you that there's cause to look at Greg Elliott and Jamal Cain on a greater level than sort of how this team found its rhythm at the beginning of conference play, in the early middle of conference play. How about that? When they won 6 of 7. They really sort of found a consistency where they were playing a ton of Howard, McEwen, Anum, Bailey, John, and mm-hmm. Jace mixed in a lot, but they're really, Greg was out for most of that stretch and Kane didn't play a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think now at this point with those five struggling as a unit, and Bailey, McEwen, Anim struggling individually, it's worth looking at sort of an even 7, as opposed to giving so much time to that primary 5.
Yeah, to your point, the starting lineup as it is right now, the peak of that lineup is definitely higher than what a bigger mix in of Elliott, Kane, and Johnson provides, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a lineup that does need to get better no matter what. It's not like completely replacing their minutes with those three guys would fix everything, but I think it's worth looking at more, and that's more of a compliment to Kane, Elliott, and Jace, because, you know, we were saying earlier this year, like before the year started, that like Greg Elliott could be the key to a big season, and he hasn't really been discussed much because of the type of role that he has. And if he can find himself getting 5 extra minutes for the rest of these games, he could really show his type of chops. Same with Jamal Cain. He's probably the most athletic guy on this team. And yeah, I'm still not entirely sure what that sort of balance looks like, but yeah, I hope that we can start to see more of that, or at least some sort of small change from Wojo that can hopefully kick these guys into gear, because this is a very important stretch coming up.
Well, I don't really know if I think watching the last three games that there's like a particular tweak that needs to be made. I just think there's no possible way you can lose Wednesday's game, can afford to lose Wednesday's game.
Correct.
It's not like, oh, the... Because you can't really fix bad shooting.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, they did miss a ton of open shots.
They're just missing open shots, especially to start games. And they just don't have a lot of confidence as shooters right now. Kobe McEwen and Shakar Anum in particular are sort of all over the place as shooters. Bailey as well, as someone that has contributed a lot of rhythm catch and shoots this year that are not dropping right now. And with those guys all struggling, the offense is not playing well enough that the defense can... Because I actually thought the defense to start the Providence game was pretty good. And they just had Pipkins on an unreal heater where he was throwing crap in that he hasn't made all season. He has really struggled. He's been maybe the primary reason that Providence has struggled as much as they have, because he was expected to come in and be this impact player right away. And it's taken him a really long time to get going. And he was unbelievable against Marquette on Saturday. Mm-hmm. And so at the beginning, I was really like, wow, they're just getting buried by this impossibly good performance from a team that's not that good. I mean, Providence is a bottom half 3-point shooting team in the nation. They are a bottom 50 2-point shooting team, so they're just not a good shooting team, and they just came out absolutely guns blazing, and I didn't think Marquette's defense was necessarily horrible. So I guess the larger point is that I'm not particularly frustrated by anything besides the losing. Like, I'm not, oh, Wojo needs to play this guy more, or Wojo is mismanaging certain situations like this. Now, does it suck that the pick and roll continues to, you know, eat them alive? Yes. But that was happening when they were winning. So it's just a really tough stretch of three games where there are clear flaws and there is an immense lack of confidence. And it kind of all builds up to this game Wednesday, where if they don't win it, it's, you know, everything hits the fan.
I guess to your point about the only thing that sucks about it is losing. Like, at this point last year, even though we didn't necessarily know what was going on in the locker room specifically, we did know that something was up with Marcus, and the turnovers were a gigantic problem. Like, that was something that we could point to and be like, yes, this right here specifically is going incredibly wrong in a way that we don't necessarily understand why it's happening that way.
Right.
Obviously we can point more to like the McEwens, Anums, and Baileys of the world, but it's something that they have gotten past at different points of the year. And so to that end, it seems a lot more likely to be fixed than what happened last year.
I would argue it's not an overwhelmingly different stretch than the January 1st to January 11th stretch. The big difference, obviously, is that those three really frustrating losses to start the conference season were sandwiched around a huge emotional, incredible win over Villanova.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have three frustrating losses like this in a row, there's just no good feeling. I mean, they haven't won since February 9th. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's more than 2 weeks ago now. And I think that part of what's fueling the negativity is just that nothing has gone super positively in a full 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. I think I saw someone tweet that Wojo is something like 9 games under 500 now in February and March.
That's fun.
Which is not great. Now that, however, factors in teams that were very bad. At least two of them that were very bad, depending on how you feel about the NIT team.
Although that NIT team, how many games did we win in the tournament? 2?
In the NIT?
Yeah, beat Oregon.
Yeah, they lost to the eventual champions in the final 8.
Hey, you know what they said all year? Ain't nothing stopping Penn State in the NIT that year.
That's correct. I also like Penn State in the real tournament this year, but I will not make my
shout out Mike Watkins for looking like a 45-year-old accountant.
Yeah, dude, that guy's a chunk.
I mean, honestly, the only reason he looks so much older than he does is his absolutely killer stash.
Yes, it's great. Before we go on a brief tangent, before we get off this brief tangent, I am inordinately high on a couple of Big Ten teams this year for the tournament, okay. And I just know they're gonna kill me because I'm gonna put too much stock in them. Mm-hmm. One of them is Penn State. Another one is Illinois.
Mm.
One that I absolutely love, and I know I'm gonna take super far because of how well they've been playing lately, is Michigan.
Yeah, I couldn't see myself getting burned by them. I haven't watched them basically since they...
They're up to 10 in KenPom.
Are they really?
Yeah.
I haven't seen them at all since, like, they started struggling. They've never been on.
When Big Ten play resumed in January, they lost. They were 1-5 to start, like, the main Big Ten season. They had started the Big Ten season 2-6, mm-hmm. and they've won 7 of 8 now,
mm.
Including, and that's not all Big Ten because there is a win over one solitary Rutger on that list.
By the way, Rutger.
Why am I saying that's not Big Ten? That is Big Ten. Allow me to explain my mistake here. It says neutral, so that's why I was thrown. KenPom,
that's weird.
They played a neutral court game because it was at MSG. That's weird.
Why?
I don't know why that's a neutral court game. Sorry, Rutgers, you're obviously in the Big Ten and you're actually quite good this year.
Yeah, I'm very.
Although they are
going to get matched up with them in the tournament. That is my main fear. Is
Rutgers?
Yes, I do not want them in the tournament.
But look at their schedule. It's just like every game they play at home, they win, and every game they play on the road, they lose. It's literally that dry for the most part. Except Michigan,
not the biggest believer in the stickiness of road away performances necessarily.
Oh man, literally, like, if you look at their schedule, the red ones are away and the green ones are home. This is a great tangent, by the way. We're about 3 to 4 minutes into this Big Ten mid-tier Big Ten teams tangent. I like
Nice. Yeah, I guess I'd like I know that there are some teams that have performed like poorly outside of their own arena. I just for whatever reason it's never registered to me that that is something that can carry over as that does carry over as much as we think. Unless it's like just stupid, like they're getting blowed out.
I want to fight you on this. We should take a break and then come back.
After we're done fighting. Do
we have anything else to say about the losing streak? I think we've talked enough about it.
Yeah, we're fine.
We need to talk about Georgetown a little bit. Yeah, but not a ton, and I want to do some more general stuff on the other side. So let's take a break, and then we'll talk more about Rutgers. Okay, more Rutgers talk. No, I am going to fight you on this. Rutgers has played a grand total of 28 games. Okay. They have played 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 games away from the rack. They have won one of those games.
Okay, I think they have played
18 games at the rack.
And my general opinion is that can actually be described as it's descriptive of past events. I don't think it's predictive of future events.
Okay, I suppose. I just think if you're 1-9 on the road and excuse me, road and neutral. You're 1-9 road and neutral because they're counting MSG as neutral here, and then they played a neutral court game in Toronto against St. Bonaventure, which is a thing that happened.
Why?
That they lost. They're 1-9 neutral and road, and the one is Nebraska.
Go Nebraska ball.
Yeah, Nebraska, for those unaware, are 7-19. So they've and then they're 17-1 at home. So I guess I understand your point, but that is not a team that I would put stock behind when they are such Jekylls and Hydes, home and away.
Yeah, I can go with the Jekyll and Hyde thing. But I also have seen them play a decent amount. I think Akwasi Aboah is stupid underrated, even though.
Oh, this is the guy that we wanted Marquette to get.
Wait, we were in on him?
Well, he was like one of the big grad transfer names, and yeah, because he was the Stony Brook guy, and
yeah.
He was one of the big grad transfer names when it was like, what does Marquette need? Probably a wing.
Wow, I would have loved him.
So he was one of the guys I had forgotten. This is where he went.
I didn't realize that we had discussed him. Maybe
I don't know if Marquette was actually ever in on him, but he was a name that I remember at the start of the off season when. You're just starved for, like, I need to pay attention to college basketball, so I'm not ready for this to be weaned off of this dopamine. And you're just, like, plumbing grad transfers, especially after you've just lost two very good parts of your program. He was one of the names that came up, I remember. And then Jace Johnson was the result, and you know what? Jace Johnson has been great.
Shout out, Jace. I kind of want to, I know you mentioned that you want to talk about Georgetown a little bit. I'd maybe want to go more brief on them because I'd love to talk about how cool it would be to win on Saturday against Seton Hall.
That's interesting. We are certainly not going to save a podcast, before that. Are you going?
No, I'd have to take a day off work. It's just not going to be able to happen. And I'm already taking a bunch of days off in March, partially because of basketball, partially because of a trip to New York to visit my sister, not to go to the Big East tournament, although I might be able to go to one of those games. Anyway, it's unfortunately not going to work out because I do have a real life and job that need to be attended to, and I blew off most of that last week to go to St. Louis for Mardi Gras, so.
Big, important Ben. Big real life and job.
Tis very unfortunate, but rest assured, I will be curled up in my apartment talking to no one, stress the hell out about making sure that Marcus gets the best send-off possible.
Well, I will be going. I will be there, and I'm excited.
It's going to be nuts.
It would be a lot better if Marquette would beat Georgetown, so there would be more positive excitement and less anxiety.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree.
Going into that game on a 4-game losing streak, especially with the last one being as devastating as losing to Georgetown would be really, really freaking bad.
Yeah, it's definitely a get-right game, and if we're able to pull that off with a relative amount of ease, which honestly should happen, it's a home game against objectively one of the bottom teams in the Big East. If they're able to get out of that with minimal issues, I think that it could be a pretty darn good storm for something cool to happen. Excuse me, on Saturday. Because that's also going to have, again, as long as Marquette is able to take care of business on Wednesday, that could get like a decent amount of national hype, in large part because of what that could mean for the All-American race.
Right, and it's just the go-down of the signature players.
Mm-hmm. Even though Miles Powell has very much struggled over the last couple months, for being honest, it's still like two players that, when they're hot, are really special to watch. And in front of a senior day crowd, most of them will be crying towards the end, in addition to the recent developments.
Yeah, I mean, don't think those two teams like each other very much.
No, I don't think so. You can find me getting very mad online before and or after the game. Of that Seton Hall game. Yeah,
That the people that are on Marquette Twitter do not dislike any other college basketball team, with the exception of quite possibly the Wisconsin Badgers, as vehemently as they do Seton Hall. I would almost say that the intensity it's more of a duller hate of Wisconsin basketball, but the intensity of the Seton Hall hatred, especially in the direction of Miles Powell, is Marquette's strongest, Marquette Twitter's strongest vitriol, with the possible exception of national college basketball writers who discredit Marcus Howard's National Player of the Year stock.
Mm-hmm. So honestly, there's a part of me that wants like both of them to go off and for Marcus to be the one who ultimately makes the big shots at the end that separates him from Powell, even though both have like, I don't know, 30 plus point games or something like that, just because I know that would generate talk around the media. Like if both players end up with 20 points on like 9 of 19 shooting, then that's not really gonna stir up attention on Sunday evening, Monday morning. But if this is like some sort of like classic performance that Marcus pulls out and then gives like a rousing speech where he shotguns a Miller Lite on the Pfizer Forum court, then
Bro, can you imagine Marcus Howard shotgunning a Miller Lite?
There's a part of me that thinks that he has not even touched a beer in his life, because that would mean that that's a second that he's not focusing on basketball. And if he doesn't focus on basketball for 1 second, then he crumbles and dies.
I just like my image of like what a person shotgunning a Miller Lite looks like, and then Marcus Howard's innocent soul. The two things don't compute.
Yeah, they definitely don't mesh.
Yeah, it's a big game though. It's kind of tough though, as I mentioned, to look at it right now and get hyped for it. If Marquette had not gone on this 3-game losing streak, say they won the Creighton game, if this game had happened before the Villanova game, it would be such a hype atmosphere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Right now, people are just sort of the Larry David gif about this team right now. I may have directly ripped that off from Joe McCann, because I think that's his summary of the team right now.
Yeah.
People are so that about the team right now that it's hard to get hyped for that kind of big showdown. But I think if they get right against Georgetown. By the way, Georgetown, quick aside, Mac McClung has played 8 minutes in 6 games.
Huh.
Mac McClung, noted Karate Kid villain, had 24 points against Marquette in the first matchup, which went down to the wire. Mm-hmm. This Georgetown team would not nearly be as competitive against Marquette without Mac McClung. So something to monitor there. Anyway, that's probably all we can say about Georgetown. But just win that game, and then the hype is real, and that matchup will be everything you want it to be from an emotional standpoint.
And we did say last week, like, as long as they take care of Georgetown, DePaul, and St. John's, like, our goal during the podcast last week was to finish out the season 4-2. And we had kind of assumed a Creighton loss at that point. And so it more or less came down to winning at Providence or at home against Seton Hall. And this is winning at home against Seton Hall is in all likelihood the less likely of the two. But, like,
I don't know if I agree with that. I just don't think Marquette is equipped to beat Creighton. I don't think
between Seton Hall and Providence.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because we had kind of knocked the Creighton game as a loss.
You're right. Okay, I know what you mean. But I definitely, if I was looking at what are the most likely, like, how would I rank them, the remaining six, when there were six remaining, I would have definitely put the Seton Hall one as a more likely win than the Creighton one, because Creighton is classic bad matchup for a team that doesn't close down shooters well.
Mm-hmm.
Or stay in front of ball rotation well.
Yeah. Can we briefly mention that there is a decent likelihood that Tyshawn Alexander next year is a first-team All-American?
Yeah. He's phenomenal.
He shut down Marcus Howard on Wednesday. Like, he completely took him out of the game.
Yeah, I think two-way is an underrated. His two-way game is extremely underrated, and he's also a legitimately phenomenal shooter.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the combination of him and Balak and Zegs to a certain extent, although Zegs' primary attribute isn't that, it's being subtly the best point guard in the Big East.
He also shot 7 of 7 from 3 on Sunday.
Zegs did?
Yeah.
Jeez, that's unfair.
Also, quick quick tangent to the tangent. Late in the broadcast on Wednesday, I forget who was announcing the Marquette game, but in referencing Mitch Ballack, they said that he is just outside of Kansas City. He is from a town, Eudora, Kansas, which is famously not anywhere close to Kansas City.
Similar to Creighton, it's somewhere in middle of America.
Kind of along those same lines.
In the words of John Rothstein.
But I think Eudora's like 40 minutes outside of KC, something like that. But I think it's right along 70, so it might take a little bit shorter than that. But like the same distance would cause someone from Chicago, if someone were saying that the equivalent distance is a suburb of Chicago, it would cause them to roll their eyes a little bit.
And that was Kansas geography with Ben.
Yeah. Always trying to get the people to learn as much as possible, because God knows you won't need it.
Anyhow.
Ooh.
What?
Nothing. I had something maybe like for the wrap up portion, but go to it.
My idea for the wrap up portion was going to be talk about teams we like.
I was going to give a quick update on another team that you need to be paying attention to going into March, the Marquette women's team.
Oh, yes. You had mentioned because we should talk about this.
They are starting to become a little bit interesting, because if you all recall last year, Carolyn Krieger, the coach of the team last year, bolted for the Penn State job, and in her stead came along Megan Duffy, who, along with all the departing seniors from last year, was tasked with essentially a rebuild job. And to that end, it started off with the team getting picked 9th in the Big East going into this year by the coaches. So the expectations were very, 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 very low. And now they are in a position to, in all likelihood, make the tournament, which is pretty fun. They did have a pretty big slip up against Villanova on Friday. They have not followed in the men counterparts' footsteps by being a good team. They are, in fact, a fairly bad team. So that loss, and it was a blowout loss too. I think it was like 14 points, something like that. It put a little bit of a damper on things, but they followed it up with a Georgetown win on Sunday, and they are still in contention for a top half finish in the Big East. And I'm not just like giving lip service here. Like, I legitimately enjoy watching like women's college basketball, because it's pretty similar style in my opinion, and it has not like a completely comparable amount of fanfare, but like there's a decent amount of hype going into March. And come March, I am just always jonesing for just a hit, another hit of college basketball. And so the women's game does not disappoint in any way, so it's definitely something I'm going to be paying attention to. That was the women's update.
We would be extremely fortunate were the Marquette women to give us alternate programming.
Yes, March, absolutely.
Because I think there is a chance that March is another difficult month for Marquette men's.
It was 2017, I believe, where the men's team lost to Seton Hall, and the next weekend, the women's team lost in the final seconds as a 5 seed to a team that I am not looking up right now because I definitely remember it, and I'm not stalling by looking it up. Hey, they could say a lot of things about me.
When you say Seton Hall, do you mean South Carolina?
Yes, you are right, South Carolina. That is what I meant.
Yeah, I was confused. I was like, what are you talking about with Seton Hall? Like, why are you talking about the tournament and then referencing? But yeah, no, we figured it out. No.
Who'd they lose to? Look it up. Come on.
This is the part of the podcast called Ben Googling Things.
It's a great segment. Quinnipiac.
Oh, gosh.
68-65.
Famous political poll university.
Correct. Market Law usually puts out a decent amount of polls around around election time. So it was a nice little polling data off.
When I was a local journalist, I was very on the Market Law poll.
Nice.
Following that.
Nice.
Want to do teams we like?
We can do teams we like.
Okay. Couple nominees. Michigan, I already said. I like Michigan. I think they've got a lot of pieces from some very good teams still hanging around.
I know the Xavier Simpson hookshot isn't efficient, but it looks cool, so I like it.
Yep. He's fourth in the country in assist rate.
Mm-hmm.
I think a big factor in their recent stretch has been Isaiah Livers coming back. Yeah. Isaiah Livers is not all the way back by any means, but for them to get up to 10 in KenPom, for clarity, they were a month ago they were 30. To go from 30 to 10 in KenPom is really difficult.
It's quite
difficult, especially this late in the season. So yeah, they're a team to watch on the rise. Team I'm not sure I like, but I want to like because the high major teams are bad this year, BYU. The Mormons beat the Zags on Saturday pretty comfortably. They're the best three-point shooting team in the country.
Yeah.
They don't play good enough defense for me to want to take them to make a Final Four. But they have sort of the classic mix of your typical Mormon-looking dudes and then just one really good big guy, similar to what they had in the Jimmer era with Jimmer, some other dudes, and Brandon Davies.
Mm-hmm.
Yoeli Childs is a really, really talented center who, when he's been able to be healthy, he's only played 17 games this year. He's been really good. So
they have a guy, Zach Zeljas. I forget if it's Zeljas or Seljas. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I made a point earlier this year, hashtag I made a tweet. Mm-hmm. I showed a picture of Zach and a picture of Nicolas Cage in the movie Raising Arizona. And I think it was the best comparison anyone has made in the history of comparisons. So
really,
if that's anyone
high. In the word, oh man, that's high praise is what I was going to say, which is the Andy Samberg, Nicolas Cage joke.
Yeah. Nice. So if anyone tries to make a comparison between those two in March, please, harass them and write threatening letters to their families saying that I was the first one to do it.
Please cease and desist and contact Ben's attorney.
Yeah. Me and my 300 followers will come at you.
Exactly.
Team that I like. I think they are pretty underrated. I really like Michigan State.
Oh, no. Wow.
Cassius.
I just think the supporting cast sucks, and he can't play on his own.
I believe in Rocket Watts. I shouldn't, but I do.
It's if they had any shooters on this team.
Aaron Henry's kind of good.
No, but like, I mean, he's a 35% three-point shooter. Like, imagine Cassius Winston. That's like right on the borderline of what you need. Imagine Cassius Winston with like two 40% three-point shooters around him.
I have a heavy preference for dudes with headbands. So that is 80% of the reason why I'm in on Michigan State. But going into the year, Cassius was the one player that I said with absolute certainty he is better than Marcus Howard. I still believe that, even though he has not had the greatest year ever. But he, to me, is the most perfect point guard. And him being a senior and this being a Tom Izzo team, I will probably have them going far in my bracket.
My only concern with them is they've lost almost every big game on their schedule.
They beat Maryland that one time. Wait, no, never mind. Literally the opposite happened.
No.
Never
mind. Yeah, that's incorrect.
The 14-0 run is definitely not a point in my favor. No, I was thinking of the Illinois game where Darren Williams did the free throw motion.
Right, and then Dosunmu almost died at the end.
Yeah, I definitely thought that his leg was going to need to get cut off.
Yeah, and he's back and smoked Penn State already.
That was a fantastic performance.
Yep, Illinois is good, man. Illinois is sneaky good.
Kofi, hashtag not Cockburn, Coburn.
Coburn, yep. Don't pronounce his name in a funny sexual way. Last team I like, Texas Tech.
Ooh, Davide.
Yes, big Davide guy. Davide might be my spiritual successor to Kyle guy. He's not quite on that level for me. But it's just, he's a similar type of player, which is why I enjoy him.
I love Jameis Ramsey.
Well, and I trust Chris Beard more than almost any coach in the country. And I think Texas Tech plays in a way that is very conducive to even if they're not the most talented this year, their team last year was obviously better. But they play in a way that leads to success in March. The one thing that you can nitpick is they had a really bad stretch to start the season where they lost consecutive games to Iowa, Creighton, and DePaul. Two of those were overtime losses, so not the most egregious. But yeah, losing at DePaul wasn't great. And then in conference, they have lost three road games that they should not have. So that's a little concerning. And then they've lost at home to Baylor and Kansas and had a great game against Kentucky that they almost won as well. So Texas Tech, recent success, similar roster with a little less talent. Chris Beard is great. That is a team that I'm willing to trust.
I can agree with that.
Any other names you'd like to throw on the fire?
A team I don't like, Cincinnati. They beat Wichita State again. Wichita State has not beaten Cincinnati since they joined the American Athletic Conference.
That is surprising.
Jaron Cumberland is, I described him about a year ago as a buffalo that took ballet classes. And he is the perfect storm of a guy that can just single-handedly beat a Greg Marshall team.
That's a very
my first ever Wichita State game. I went with my dad to the game that was on CBS at the end of the 2018 season, and it was probably one of the better games that I've seen in person. That was one of the more heartbreaking performances, though, because Cincinnati just went off, and then they lost to Nevada in the tournament. So suck on that, Mick Cronin. That's all I have to say about Cincinnati.
Who's Cincinnati's coach now?
John Brennan? Yeah, I think he was an assistant. Oh, wait, no, he coached Northern Kentucky last year.
Why is it spelled Brennan? I don't like that.
You tell me.
Oh, team I really like, and it's really freaking obvious, but I just want to drill it again, having watched them win a big game this weekend, Kansas.
Shout out Kansas.
Kansas is
really good. And in a year where no one is really good, Kansas is really good.
Do you know who would enjoy a guy like Marcus Garrett? Marquette. I would.
I think anyone would enjoy a guy like Marcus Garrett.
If he had like a little bit of actual offensive skill, like transferable to the NBA offensive skill, he would be by far and away best player in the country.
Wow.
Because he is an amazing defender.
Yep. Yeah, that's the word for sure. Yeah. Sylvia D'Souza will also be back for the tournament.
Kansas is just, he's just not going to play.
Yeah, they don't need him. Exactly. But I'm just like, Kansas has 7 or 8 dudes that are just.
Sylvia did have a great run in the Big 12 and the NCAA tournament in 2018 also in that Final Four run.
When they like conjured him off of pulled his red shirt or whatever.
No, you're thinking of Ochai Agbaji last year. But Sylvia, it took him.
Oh, that's right. That was Agbaji, wasn't it? Jeez.
That was last year. The year before that, he had some Sylvia had some eligibility issues, and the NCAA cleared him.
Sylvia D'Souza eligibility issues? Wild. Never.
But yeah. He went absolutely off in the Big 12 tournament, had a great game against West Virginia in the Big 12 final. And that was a weird Bill Self team where he actually was forced to play 4 guards. And
right. One
of those guards, Sviatoslav Mikhailiuk,
Sweet.
Just completely shut down Marvin Bagley in the Elite Eight. Like, it was the weirdest defensive performance I've ever seen.
Svi was in the Rising Stars game. On
Chatsby.
Yep. I was like watching with my roommate who's an NBA guy. I was like, who's that? He's like, that's Mikhailiuk. And I was like, from Kansas? Really? Yeah. Dude in the NBA?
Yeah. I kind of remember him like making some noise early on. Some of my Kansas followers were very giving him high praise.
That's high praise. We're nearing an hour here.
Yeah, look at that.
Do you have anything else?
The Oregon Stanford game has been on in the background. The women's game, Sabrina.
Oh yeah.
Ionescu
is pronounced.
She is maybe the greatest player I've ever seen. Like, she's just completely dominating.
She is very, very good, and I was also thrown that you were describing a Pac-12 game, and then I realized you must have been talking about women's basketball, because the Conference of Champions on the men's side, at least, only plays in on Thursdays and Saturdays usually. So that's a bit thrown. Anyhow, let's wrap up. Well, beat freaking Georgetown! Oh my god! Yeah, please,
beat Georgetown.
But then, yeah, I mean. That's where your focus has got to turn.
Win 2 games this week. How about that?
Yeah. Please. Just do it for us.
For me.
For me. For me and only me.
The truest fans of Marquette.
Absolutely. All right. Talk to you guys next week.